ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode explores, expands, and evolves the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity, joy, and exponential growth. And now, here is your host, Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Adventures in Truth livecast. My name is Jim Case, and I am your host and excited to be here with you today. Looking forward to a great conversation. Today, I'm excited because any number of reasons I could be excited, but today I'm particularly excited because we're coming up on, at the end of September, I'm coming up on a year of my book being published. And that's an exciting thing to me to come up on a year and start to see all the promotion and things we were doing for pre-orders and all that kind of good stuff. But I wanted to take some time. I'm going to start doing this on a regular basis, but I want to start to dive deep into sections of the book, into chapters of the book, and begin to introduce you to the various concepts and things. If you've not gotten the book, I encourage you to www.fearsofchoicebook.com. You can order there through Barnes & Noble and Amazon and IndieBound and all that kind of good stuff. But it's going to be a great show. Today, we're going to focus on chapter two of the book. And chapter two of the book is all about, where did it go? It's all about how fear staked its claim in our collective psyche. And this is really about how fear has evolved in the human experience. And so this is where we're starting and kind of giving you a foundation for understanding the evolution of it so that as you deal with your relationship with fear, you can begin to deal with it more realistically and be dealing with it more practically because the evolution is and it to me is an interesting process because it's just all kinds of different things that occurred that brought fear to the forefront and then fear became the thing that it is, and at least in my perception of it. And then as it's progressed throughout our history, it's gotten more and more so. But anyway, we're going to have a great conversation about that. Looking forward to that. We're going to go dive into that right after we get through our opening stuff here. So we're going to be right back right after this break, and we'll see you in just a moment. Fear is a choice. Quick commercial since we're spending the time on the books today, but fearsachoicebook.com is where you can get the book, where you can order it. You can look at the reviews. You can check out testimonials. You can watch some videos. But more importantly, you can order the book. And if you have ordered the book, if you've read the book, thank you for that. Thank you for participating. Thank you for jumping into changing your relationship with fear, because that's really what this book is all about. I ask you, please, if you've read the book, if you've gotten the book, please send a review to wherever you ordered from. Help others find the book. Help us move up in the ranking because people are seeing that people are excited about what this book is offering. And ultimately, again, this book is about changing your relationship with fear. And today we're going to focus on that specifically, focus on some of the evolution of fear in the human experience and how it's become such a thing. And hopefully it will begin to help you understand your relationship with fear and begin to help change that and move it into something much more powerful. So we'll be right back right after this. Whoops. All right. Whoops. My world is good. My world is good. This is the year of conscious creation, and I am attempting to consciously create in every direction I possibly can. And we should all be going that direction. And when you change your relationship with fear, that's one of the benefits of changing your relationship, is that you become conscious of what you're creating so that you can begin to impact immediately the areas of your life that you're struggling or having challenges with. Because when you change that relationship with fear, you no longer are in victim mentality. You're no longer at the effect of. You recognize that whatever I'm perceiving in my reality is simply the reflection of my beliefs and thoughts and ideas being reflected back to me. And that's what I see when I look into the world. Yes, you see houses and trees and you see people and you see cars and all those good things. But the predominant thing that you experience is the energy of those things. And those energies that you experience are literally your reflected energy back to you. So my world is good. My world is good is my way of reaching as many people as possible to create a powerful change in the mass consciousness. The mass consciousness is this field of energy that we generate as a mind, as we, as egos, as minds, as we generate all of these things, that these ideas and thoughts, and we build rules and laws and beliefs. The more that more people and the more that comes together in a collective, the more it becomes part of the collective consciousness. And what I want to do and what I am doing with this process of my world is good is changing that perspective. I want to add my world is good to that. I want to see the goodness that's beginning to change our world. I want to see us focused into that goodness. We are 7.5 billion unique worlds inhabiting this planet. And I say that specifically because no one can live your life for you. No one can create your life for you. No one can change your life for you without your consent or ability to participate. And what that means is that you have the ability to respond to things in ways that you never really truly imagined when you're unencumbered by fear. But when you're focused in my world is good, you are generating an energy that, while I'm generating it in my world and you're generating it in your world and you're generating it in your world, as we come together energetically, we share that energetic bond, and that energy then begins to permeate the consciousness, begins to become part of that mass consciousness, which is how that tipping point is created. So join the movement. It doesn't require anything but your energy, focus, and intention. Bring yourself to the game and show up for us in this movement of change, in this movement of goodness, in this movement of love, bringing this energy back onto the planet, into the planet, however you want to look at it. All I know is that I want to create a powerful change, and I'm starting it in my world. And I'm hoping that as my world connects with your world also gets to experience that goodness. So I ask you to reach out in this year of conscious creation. My world is good. 10 times when you wake up in the morning, you get in your body. Oh, my world is good. And begin to appreciate things in your world as you're saying that. See them, experience them. Whether it's your partner, your home, or your dog, or your walk, or your work, or whatever it is, find the things you appreciate. Focus into the my world is good. And at the end of your day, 10 times, to re-encapsulate this idea that my world is good. My world is good, and therefore reflects back to me the goodness that I present to it. And my world is good. My world is good. And then use it often throughout the day. If you feel yourself off center, if you feel yourself not in alignment with where you want to be, simply shift it. My world is good. You say it, you focus into it, it will change your space. I promise you that. So my world is good. Let's go in. Let's dive into this amazing conversation we're going to have today. We'll be right back right after this. All right, all right, all right. I'm excited for this conversation. So we're going to dive right in. How fear staked its claim in our collective psyche. Excuse me while I adjust my screen. I'm getting a little feedback, and I want to see if that's in part. There we go. All right. So how fear has taken this change in our collective in our collective psyche. Fear is a Choice book. Here it is. It's gorgeous. It's wonderful. And we're going to dive into this today. So how fear has staked its claim. I apologize. My glasses are supposed to be non-reflective, but that's not true. So you may have heard it told that early man was a more instinctual being than he was a feeling or thinking being. His experiences were that of an advanced mammal with some rudimentary cognitive skills that slowly evolved in discovering other skills like communication, fire building, tool making, etc. As these skills began to increase in quantity and complexity, more and more of the brain had to be engaged. And as these new skills and their accompanying knowledge created new neural pathways of learning, the capacity to learn grew and in turn created changes in the physiology of the brain and the body, moving the entire being into a forward progressive evolution that has continued for millennia. When man experienced and took notice of things that he could not readily understand, mostly natural events such as lightning and thunder and tornadoes and hurricanes and volcanoes and earthquakes, his brain and body developed new responses. The human capacity for understanding had not yet evolved enough to explain or comprehend these experiences. And during the more instinctual period in our distant past, these events were simply responded to with action taken in an attempt to ensure survival. As deeper cognitive functioning evolved, so did the desire to understand and explain what was being experienced. And so these early people began to interpret, create stories, and imagine reasons for these events, even though their thought process was still based on limited or no understanding. What's more, while the desire grew to understand the experiences of life around him, man's desire to understand himself was also evolving. He began to ask himself, how could these events be happening and what do they mean? Who or what is doing these things? And this is a very important juncture here in understanding the human evolution, right? If you think about how our minds work, if you think about how on a daily basis, I was just thinking about this morning and actually laughing about it, because you can pull any topic you want out of thin air and your mind will make up a story about it. Go ahead and try it right now. Just pick anything. Pick pumpkin pie. Just think about pumpkin pie and just watch what happens as you think pumpkin pie. All of the stories that you have about pumpkin pie, good stories, bad stories, maybe your response is, God, pumpkin pie is disgusting. Or your first response is, ugh, it's pumpkin spice time again. Or your response is, oh my God, I can't believe it's pumpkin spice time again. But there's a story automatically associated, right? And so even in rudimentary consciousness, I think there is a response, there is a desire. The human ego has a desire to understand, has a desire to assign meaning to things. So in the beginning, that's how it evolves, right? You begin to have experiences. You have no idea what these experiences are. You have no relationship to those experiences. So you start to find ways to assign meaning. So because humans have an innate desire to understand their experiences and to give those experiences meaning and purpose, these early humans begin to create meaning as a way of understanding these strange and often scary events. And so how did they do this? Well, they did it by making up stories using their imagination. And over time, these intricate stories became the fabric of their lives and experiences. They told them repeatedly until they became the core belief of their experience, passed on generation after generation. It wasn't until their cognitive abilities evolved again that later humans were able to explore, test, experiment with, and understand the experiences, these experiences in two distinct ways. So, storytelling, right? Imagination. You see this incredible thunderstorm happen. You have no clue of what could possibly be creating it. And so as you observe, as you experience things, maybe there was a wise elder in the tribe, in the group that went out into the wilderness to experience. And maybe this person had a connection, was able to do some deep thought or contemplation, or even get into meditation, or just simply wandered around out looking for answers and came back to the tribe with a whole experience that he had had. And that whole experience became a story, and that story became mythology, and that mythology became culture. Because, and I know I'm jumping steps, but the point being that those stories are how these things became generated. So if there was not an understanding of it, then it could be used to build fear and eventually did. So maybe the initial stories were not much as much fear related, but as they grew and as the understanding of the power of fear grew, I think that we individual human personalities, I still think that over time, from the very beginning, you know, there were various types of personalities. There were leaders, there were followers, there were builders, there were, you know, there were different types of personalities. So to me, that was that's how it's kind of evolved. And what I'm trying to present in this book is understanding that it was a natural evolution. We didn't come in fear. We built the fear in as we went because we didn't understand what we were experiencing and we needed to create meaning. So we move on now. These new and different ways that we talked about in the last paragraph, there's two distinct ways. These new and different ways were called religion and science. And religion was born of the ritual, superstition, and magical thinking developed over millennia of stories. And science came from experimentation and trial and error processes that man devised in an attempt to more concretely explain his existence. So here we are at the juncture of storytelling, right? And we all know, I mean, as we look back in history, every tribe had varying types of people. There was always, it seems, there was always a spiritually driven, a shaman, someone who handled the mystical end of the world. And then there was the chief, who was the practical one, or the one who led, who tended to be practical, who could plan, who could protect, who could see more clearly the things that needed to be happening physically in the world to protect this community. And so they began to work in tandem and work together to find ways to create solutions. But again, as power grew, as the stories had already been told over and over again, there was this sense of how do we manage people? How do we do this? So we're going to dive into that a little more on the other side of the break. But what I want to start with here is we're going to take a quick break and we're going to dive into our moment of focus. So we'll be right back. All right. This is one of my favorite parts of the show, guys. This is where, as we start the process of talking about what we're talking about today, I like to take a moment after we kind of lay the foundation to create this moment of focus. I truly believe where two or more are gathered is a powerful, powerful thing. And the more of us that can come together in energy, whether it's my world is good, whether it's whatever your choices are, the trick is that the more that we engage it as a collective, the more impact it can have. And not that it isn't impactful individually, but it becomes greater and greater exponentially as a result. So let's take a time to focus. Is for me a time to bring ourselves back into alignment with all of who we are, but also to focus into the breath. The breath for me is the foundation of our experience. It is the core of who we are because it is prana, it is chi, it is life force. And so when you learn to manage breath, you learn to manage energy. And they go hand in hand because as breathing is a complete cycle of creation, every breath. When you inhale and exhale, you're bringing in new life and new energy. You're exhaling old expelled stuff that you don't need anymore. So I want you to focus into this moment and I want you to focus into wherever you are and get settled to where you are comfortably. And let your eyes gently close if you can. If you're driving, please don't do that. But if you're wherever you are, letting yourself settle in. And I want you to focus your breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. Again, in through the nose and out through the mouth. And just breathe in that pattern as you take in the words and as you explore with me, as we go deep into our individual experience. As you're breathing into the nose and out through the mouth, I want you to become aware as your eyes are closed of your field. And what is your field? Your field is all of the energy that expands beyond this physical body. So we know that we are a physical body. We know the ego is attached to this physical body. But there is another presence, another essence I call the soul, maybe the higher self. It is the spark of the divine that is within me and within you and within all of us. And it is the part that is driving this evolution forward. And so as you focus into your field, I want you to just become aware of how enormous it is and how much of it there is. And maybe this is your first time experiencing it, or maybe it's not your first time and you just love to bask in that experience. But the ability to tap into the experience of all that you are is simply a profound one. And so as you're breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, I want you to become aware of that field. And now I want you to just gently bring your focus right into the center of your heart, right in the center of your chest. Bring your focus right into that. And as you continue to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, I want you to consciously call your field into your heart space. I want you to consciously draw that field from all directions around you. Feel that energy as you bring it into your heart. I want you to experience the internal experience. And as you pull that energy in, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, feeling the tingle and the warmth of that energy as it fills your chest and that consciousness just expands through you. It's not limited by your physical body, but you are coalescing this energy within your heart space so that you can experience the enormous power of who you are. And as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, feel that intensity, feel the depth of your energy, and let that consciousness begin to explore the inside of your being. Let it roam around the inside of your head. Let it move through the cavities in your brain, in your eyes, in your nose, where your brain sits. Be in the fluid, be in the brain. Reach in and gently touch the pituitary. Experience you from the inside and just notice the incredible brain in your head and trace around to where that comes down to the brainstem. And then see the spine. Look down from the brainstem at the connection to the spine, this incredible, incredible transmitter of energy, this vibratory, extraordinary piece of equipment that we have, surrounded in fluid, wrapped in bone, that's just conducting, continually conducting energy up and down the spine. And then the nerves that come off the spine, that reach into the body, to all of the organs and all of the tissues. And become aware of your internalness. Become aware of all that's happening inside of you. You don't have to do anything with it. Just be aware of it. Be participating in it as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. Maybe this is the first time you're experiencing your internalness. Let that consciousness roam around as you explore your organs and muscles and tissues. And just appreciate all of it, because all of it works without your conscious attention. And in the experience of being human, part of that is learning to be more conscious of those processes, to be more aware of how it all comes together and how it all works, because it's creating through you. You are the animator. You are the creator. And so you have the ability to create change when you have relationship with all of this. And so as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, I want you to become even more intently focused into the heart space and allowing your consciousness to just be. And now we're going to go into focused breath. We're going to breathe into a count of four through the nose. And as you do, you're going to breathe and fill all the way up. And then when you reach the top, you're going to relax into that fullness. You're going to relax into that expanded experience. And then you're going to hold it for a moment. And then you're going to consciously choose to purge. You're going to surrender all of that new energy and air. And you're going to let it go to a count of six. So we reach the deepest part of the lungs, purging all of that old energy and air and allowing a space for new. And as you purge all that energy, I want you to relax into that new space of anticipation, that space of allowing, that space of preparedness for the next moment. And then you engage the lungs and begin to breathe again. So again, in through the nose, out through the mouth. We're going to begin now. Focusing into the breath as we inhale. Two, three, four. Feeling full, feeling amazing, relaxing the neck and the shoulders. Holding in that moment of fullness. And now consciously choose to let it go. Surrender it all. Two, three, four, five. Six, beautiful. And now rest in that void, rest in that emptiness, rest in that space of total awareness as you re-engage the lungs and inhale. Two, three, four, feel that fullness, be in the fullness of that energy, relax the body, and now release it. Two, three, four, five, six. Beautiful. Rest in the emptiness. It feels a little uncomfortable. That's okay. Rest in it. Rest in anticipation. Rest in it. And now engage the lungs. Inhale. Two, three, four. Feel the fullness. Feel that amazing feeling of satiation. Feel the fullness of your experience. And now release it all. Surrender it. Two, three, four, five, six. In anticipation, in the emptiness, in the void, being at peace with the nothingness, being at peace with all of it. As you re-engage the lungs and pull that life force into your body. Two, three, four. Feeling the tingle of that life race through your body. Feel the cells of your body expanding around it. And now consciously choose to let it all go again. Surrendering. Two, three, four, five, six. Beautiful. And as you release the last of that breath, be at peace in that space of emptiness, knowing that the next moment you will fill with more energy as you engage the lungs, continuing this process on your own now. Continue as you inhale, take in that breath, feel it magnificently through your whole body. And as you continue this cycle of breath, stay with the process, stay focused into the breath. Feel the power of the clarity of being able to manage your energy. Excuse me, when you recognize that fear is a choice, you release the breath because you no longer restrict the heart. You no longer restrict your power center. You open them up to receive as much vital force and energy as you can take so that you can continue to evolve and grow, so that you can continue to connect in love, continuing that breath process. And as you release all of the breath, don't be afraid to surrender it all. Let it all go. Because you are creating in this moment. And in this moment, you are surrendering what was to what is as you embrace the next breath. Be a part of that creation process. Be conscious of the power of that consciously creating process so that you can see the impact that you create through understanding and utilizing your breath. It's a powerful, powerful thing. And now, let these words wash over you as you continue to breathe, as you continue to take that energy in and release that energy. I surrender to my potential. I surrender to my abundance. I surrender to my love. Feel the powerful expansion that occurs when you surrender. So I surrender to my potential. I surrender to my abundance. I surrender to my love. I surrender to my potential. I surrender to my abundance. I surrender to my love. Feel that powerfully and deeply. Let it wash over you. Let it focus you. And as you complete the cycle of breath that you're in, bringing your awareness back into this space, taking your time as we move back into this conversation and taking in this information and this energy about how fear has staked its claim. And bring your awareness back to the space as we carry on. Welcome back. Good to see you. Here we are. We're in chapter two, how fear has staked its claim in our collective psyche. My goodness. All right. We are carrying on with chapter two. We've just talked about the new ways, the two new different ways of experiencing and experimenting with what people are learning. And that was science and religion. The purpose of understanding all this evolution is to allow us to clearly see that our first experiences with the emotion of fear came from encountering things we could not explain. It was decided or agreed that there must be some force or forces much greater than us, and that apparently this force didn't like us and would even kill us given the chance. And from this belief that we were not safe in the world under the invisible control of a mighty and terrible power, we gave birth to mythology. And fear, excuse me, mythology and fear. As a result, our very survival was no longer limited by what our senses could identify for us, i.e. animals, plants, and the terrain. And now there was an even bigger unknown element, the gods. You might even say that fear is the original sin, that point when humanity determined that it was separate from God. This concept of separation triggered a convoluted and difficult journey, and it created a fertile, rich soil in which fear could grow like a weed, and along with it, our sense of unworthiness. Powerful, powerful stuff here, guys. This is an important, I think, understanding at core of some of the mythology that's out, you know, that we've lived through. But understanding that even in the idea of original sin, I think the idea of original sin is the separation from God, is the belief that we are less than that. And that when we associated more with ego than we did with soul, that was the original sin. And that in that, we created a focus that was completely non-divine. And so all of our thought processes, all of our convolutions, all of our everything, all those stories, everything was very focused in the strength and the power is outside of ourselves. So we have to subjugate ourselves to that strength and power. But it's a false premise, right? It doesn't fly in the face of because it's driven by fear. Once the baseline of fear was established in the species, propagated by stories of things way beyond our control and understanding, this message of fear and unworthiness grew and deepened in our psyche. Those in power began to realize that if they could claim to be closer to God or the gods than the rest of humanity, they would retain ultimate power and control. And so to integrate this belief of even further separateness, they began to use their power to threaten the survival of those less powerful, continually stimulating the fight and flight response of the people they were attempting to control. This constant assault on survival stimulated and embedded the fear response in the consciousness of the masses. And as we see that everything is in constant evolution, the embodiment and transference of this provoked fear evolved as well. Fear became part of the belief structure of entire cultures, deeply embedded in the consciousness and psyches of virtually every known society across the globe. Stories of fear were told and retold, sometimes with heightened overlays of fear. And as these beliefs were passed on life to life, generation to generation, more and more people were swept into a lifestyle based on fear, wherein they not only believed in the fear, but developed powerful belief systems that one's very survival depended on maintaining a focus on fear. So if you were to think back through time and you think back through our experiences in the human experience, as best as we understand it, we see that evolution occur. And we see it occur powerfully in the world. And so if you stop from this position, from this vantage point and look back, you can see that the rudimentary or the basic fear that we kind of look at now and go, gee, that was silly. Why were they afraid of that? Has evolved into where we are now. And where we are now is a fear-based consciousness that is easily manipulated and also believed to be real and accepted. And so now you see the divide that we are living in our world. And that's where I think fear is a choice is so important. Because in choosing life, you can't choose fear because fear does not carry life. Fear carries fear. So as we continue to evolve, we continue to adapt and grow this information. And remember, beliefs are just thoughts you keep thinking. So the more that we continue to propagate the idea of not enoughness and unworthiness, the more we build it into the culture, the more we build it into. And then, of course, as smarter, you know, as bright people, as different types of people showed up on the planet looking for their own pathways, and they began to find that, wow, I can use this energy to manage people. I can use this energy to create a life that I want. And so that ego focus then begins to really drive the fear life, really begins to drive that experience in a huge way. And that continues for eons and eons and eons. And at the same time, as always through history, there was also the people who could see through the illusion, who could see through the veil. And when the power of fear became that strong, they began to attack those who could see it for what it was. So because it would interfere with their ability to manage and control. So this is the continuing evolutionary process. So as we carry on, so over thousands of years, fear and stories of fear became part of the DNA, our very cellular memory. This is significant on numerous levels when you understand that our DNA is an incredible database. Within this amazing part of the human physiology is everything we are, ever were, ever will be, as individuals, as a species, and as a life form. It has been proven through science that within our physical structure is the same material that stars were made of. That's pretty miraculous. But when you consider all of that potential, both good and bad, that lies dormant within all of us, it is unfathomable. And in addition, when you consider concepts like the 100th monkey, that's a hypothetical phenomenon in which a new behavior or idea is said to spread rapidly by unexplained means from one group to all related groups. Once a critical number of members of one group exhibit the new behavior or acknowledge the new idea, you begin to get a glimpse of our interconnectedness to everything. And this understanding is critical to understanding the evolution of fear, right? So this is not all happening in a bubble. This is all happening in real time with every human in every experience. They're all going through these processes. And so wherever you were, whatever group you were a part of, you had your own mythology, you had your own stories. And then as population grew and we began to interact and we began to have wars and conquests. And so now new people were overlaying their stories on top of our stories. And so the layers of the fear story began to change and evolve and become more complex, because as new groups' belief systems were married into other groups' belief systems, whether they eradicated them all or not, which is largely not possible, this created layers and layers and layers of this consciousness of fear that makes it appear that it's something natural to the human experience, that it's natural in the sense that we came into this physical world, this time and space reality, with fear. And the contention in my explanation here is that is absolutely not the case. We learned it. We learned it through our humanness because we evolved fear as a component of humanness. Because it is a component of humanness, like everything else, we have the ability to use it or not use it, to change it and interact with it differently. So consider too that when anything within a culture becomes pervasive, it becomes part of the fabric or the DNA of that culture as well. Since no system, race, culture, community, or individual exists in a vacuum, all of the significant pieces of potential that became woven into this fabric called DNA is shared. Put simply, as we explored and discovered more and more of the planet, more and more connections were made between different tribes and cultures, and this enabled more and more expansion as various DNA commingled, expanding all of the DNA potential like never before. Again, important, it isn't just understanding that this was a negative or that it is a negative evolution. It is part of the evolution, both positive and negative. So we're evolving continually and expanding and learning and growing, and the soul is just there experiencing. The ego is the one that wants to assign meaning. The ego is the one that wants to stir things up and get things crazy. The soul is simply an observer. Soul is simply being present in each experience and absorbing and non-judging the experience, just experiencing, because that's who we are. We are the spark of that divine essence. And that we are the eyes, ears, and nose, and taste and touch of that divine essence within the confines of the physical world. So we get to experience all sides of it. And that's the important thing about fear as a choice. All sides of it means you have to release fear to understand the other side of the fear, change the relationship with fear so that you can understand what that connected experience is, who the essence of you truly is. Put simply, as we explored and discovered more and more of the planet, more and more connections are made between different tribes. As we said this, since fear and separation are not and were not something exclusive to any group of people, each sought ways to express it, explore it, and understand it within the context of their own cultural systems. Within all of them, fear evolved into a tool of control, manipulation, and power manifested through this foundational logic. If the gods can wield their power over all human beings, then I can convince people I come from the gods, bloodlines. And then I can also wield that power over others. So interesting, another interesting piece of evolution here is that we began to build these idea of bloodlines and histories, right? And there were lots of bloodlines, but those bloodlines became convinced of their specialness, of something that they believed they were better than because their blood was better than. And really, it's just another story. It was just another story. It's also important to note here that humans as a species seek connection. In whatever circumstances, there is a deep desire to be part of a tribe. It is critical to survival, and maybe even more so than food. Hence, if you can yield enough influence and power to make people believe you can remove them from their tribe, it triggers the already deeply held belief in one's separation from God, the universe, and source. And in short, when you can keep people stimulated in an awareness of separation, you keep them in fear. And this level of fear is not run-of-the-mill type. This is core fear, the kind that can completely irrational and illogical, born from the belief and illusion of separation. I really want to drive this point home, guys, because this is what we are living right now in our lives. The divisiveness, the separation that has been driven into this culture, at least in this country, but it's also happening all over the world. I interact with people all over the world weekly and ask questions about how is this evolving there? And they are all having their own experience, just as I described, in their own culture. And within the culture of the United States here, we're having all of these things go on. And we're seeing the deliberate choice of dividing people, the deliberate choice of generating fear, because we've already established the power center. We've already established in our psyches that the government is important. And because the government's important, it has the ability to influence our lives. So instead of the gods now, it's the government. And you can even see that changed relationship between religion and government, between religion and people. It's all evolving and changing because it's built on illusion. It's built on the idea that someone has more power or ability than anyone else does because they've learned to wield fear. Because they've learned to use fear in a way that manages people and lets people create what they want. So as you see out into the world, and again, I'm not trying to paint a picture of bad guys and good guys. I'm just painting the picture of seeing it. Remember, the soul observes, the soul experiences. So the point is to observe, to experience, to see it for what it is so that you can make new choices and so that you can change your relationship with fear. That's what this is all about, right? And so there is another piece to this equation. Within early populations, there were different levels of consciousness, just as exists now. Every tribe had its chief, but it also had its shaman, its seer, its mystic. Later, these magicians became rulers and priests, people who believed to have special or direct connections to God or the gods. This reinforced the belief of separation within the masses, which created even greater fear built on the feeling of worthiness born out of the belief in separation. So again, we're seeing this powerful, powerful impact where, depending on who you were born to, depending on the family you came into, you already begin to have a structure of consciousness about how worthy you are and how good you are. And it's built into the culture, and it's all an illusion. It's all a story that was built continually over time. And this is why I'm trying to get this point across, is that it's all story, guys, all of it. The ego is a manufacturer of stories. And it just takes everything that it assumes. Because remember, your eyes, ears, nose, taste, touch, all of it's working 24/7. it's all taking and filtering and dealing with stuff. So even if you're not attending to things, you're taking in information, you're taking in tidbits, and the ego is storing that in the warehouse, or we are storing it. But then when the ego is looking for ways to build its story, depending on what your cultural bringing is, it's going to go back into the warehouse and flood you with ideas and thoughts and memories of things that you think you believe that are nothing more than manufactured stories by the mind in order to support your core vibration. Let me repeat that. All of that is nothing more than stories and information your ego is attempting to throw into the space to support your core vibration. If your core vibration is based in fear, you will continually propagate ideas of fear. Does that mean you run around constantly going, boo, no, but it means your dialogue may. It means that you will have thoughts consistently of your not enoughness, or you'll find ways to contrive your world to support the idea of the fear. So, I can't go do X because if I do X, if I eat this, then I have to not eat for a while to balance that off. Because I'm afraid that if I eat this, I'm going to get fat. If I eat this, I'm not going to be healthy. As opposed to addressing what it is you think you're going to eat and then choosing a different energy about it, you're choosing fear and then making a beautiful story about fear over here. Do you see that? It's just a story about fear. It isn't anything else. Eat the food, drink the drink, go for the walk, do what you're going to do. But don't let fear run the story. And that's really what's become our habit, is fear running the story. I have a comment I want to touch in on. Hi, Jackie. Good to see you. Absolutely. Absolutely glad that you're here. I love you and appreciate you. Thank you very much. And okay, where are we at here? Wow, time is flying. We're going to take a quick break so I can breathe for a second. And then we're going to come back and dive a little bit more firmly into this, as we already have. And we will be back right after this.
The Science of Transformation Method. And I can't tell you the difference that it's made in my life.
This program is all about you coming into the greatest form of you. Guys, www.thescienceTransformation.com. I would love to work with you. I have been doing this work for over a decade, actually probably closer to two decades. And helping people change their relationship with fear is a profound process. And the Science of Transformation is about doing just that, helping you to refocus your energy. It's a combination of processes that, one, stimulate and activate the prefrontal cortex of the brain, opening up the channel for higher thinking, higher ability, but also helping you to learn how to shift your energy, how to spin your vibration up so that when you're encountering life, you can begin to encounter it from a different perspective, the view from 50,000 feet, as it were. I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of people over the last few years and helping them to transform their experience. It's a powerful program that really connects you to you. This is not about me putting band-aids on your problems. This is about you evolving through you and being able to change your relationship with fear, but also to understand how you're wired so that you can begin to connect the wiring in a way that serves and expands your experience. Not that what you're living isn't currently evolving and expanding. This is about breaking that open to your greatest potential. And all roads lead to the same place. Some take longer than others. What I know about the Science of Transformation is it's a powerful tool that cuts through and helps you to really zero in on and create powerful, positive change, but also in the entirety of your being, not just in your mind or your heart, but in the entirety of who you are, you start to see the dots connecting in your own experience, and you can pull the threads of those dots and begin to unravel things that have kept you from being all of who you want to be and who you know you are, and keep you from that idea of unworthiness. So www.sciencetransformation.com. Check it out. Love to work with you. Let's continue as we carry on for the last few minutes of the show here. So where are we? We are in Fears of Choice, Chapter 2. More and more we go. I have to remember where I left off. All right. So we were talking about early populations are you seeing how this experience? Okay, so this reinforced the belief of separation within the masses, which created even greater fear built on the feeling of worthiness born out of the belief in separation we talked about. So are you seeing this experience is not new or much different from the experiences of our current reality? It has simply evolved and become embedded in the fabric of our now collective world. And so for me, when we were less connected, these things were occurring within each individual sort of DNA strand, as it were, in our own collectiveness, wherever we were. But as the world began to become more of the collective, we began to have a much deeper experience of this. And so now we're experiencing it on a much more profound level, and we're seeing it across the world, which is a powerful thing to me, because it's allowing us to see in real time and in reality, ego-driven world, soul-driven world. I don't know if that's a thing, the awakening or whatever that all of that stuff is. I just know what I'm seeing now. I know what I'm experiencing now. And it's important and it's necessary to really get conscious about how you're moving through the world, because the impact is profound. By now, you're probably thinking, this is fascinating, but how does this demonstrate that fear is a choice? Though it appears to be tied to our very physiology. Wait a minute. This is fascinating, but how does this demonstrate that fear is a choice? Though it appears to be tied to our physiology. Excellent question. Here's the answer. First, we must accept the concept that fear is and was not intrinsic, that it is and was learned. The consciousness of fear has been handed down, trained and retrained over and over again. And as with anything we learn, we have the choice to use it or not, to engage it or not. And as such, while belief has become a deeply embedded societal belief, it is still a learned response. Remember, beliefs are simply thoughts you keep thinking. The more consistent the thought, the deeper and stronger the belief grows. The powerful tradition that supports these beliefs can be seen in virtually all cultures, tribes, and religions. And that tradition is storytelling. All of the culture's shamans, seers, priests, rulers found ways to document their stories of fear by creating books, Bibles, holy works, and tombs that continue to perpetuate stories from generation to generation. And regardless of the incredible nature or forced believability of these stories, the simple act of repeatedly telling them created entrenched beliefs that work their way through the generations. And what anchors people to continue to believe them for no other reason than survival, and believing their very existence depends on it, is, you guessed it, fear. I want to read that again. What anchors people to continue to believe them being the beliefs, for no other reason than survival, and believing their very existence depends on it, is, you guessed it, fear. The incredible part of this is that we will believe the unbelievable if it means our survival is at stake. In other words, we're willing to suspend logic and rationality because of that fear. And much of that is due to our deeply ingrained concept and frequently misguided conditioning of what the majority of us call God. And that will be probably our next juncture here. But so that brings our chapter to a close. But I think it's important, the tail end of this chapter is really important, because again, it speaks to what we're dealing with today, right now. In other words, we are willing to suspend logic and rationality because of fear. So if you can train people to believe that they're in danger all the time, you are able to tap into a core of unworthiness that stimulates a powerful amount of fear that changes people. that changes how we do things, that changes how we experience things. I encourage you to take a moment and think through this, to be with this, what we've just talked about in the book here, to just be with it and sit with it and let it ruminate through you and feel the truth in it, but then begin to understand the truth within ourselves. This is not an overwhelming thing. This is simply a process of awareness, simply a process of awakening. And with that, I want to say how much I appreciate you all again. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for being part of the show. It's time to move on. But fearsofchoicebook.com, we just went through chapter 2 of the book today. We'll go through more chapters in the future here. I love sharing this with you and talking more in depth about the power of this book and how it can help you to change your relationship with fear. I hope you gained something from this today. I appreciate you being here. I hope you have an amazing day. And we will see you next time. Thank you again, Jackie. My world is good. Love you too. My world is good. We'll see you all soon. And I keep babbling, but I'm done now. I have to find my button. The end of the show. Yay. Thanks, guys. Have a great day. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Livecast. Please like, subscribe, and share. If you'd like to learn more about Jim's book, Fear is a Choice, Unraveling the Illusion of Our Separation from Love, check it out at www.fearisachoicebook.com. Also check out Moments of Truth, a new offering from Adventures in Truth. If you'd like to work with Jim, check out www.thescientetransformation.com to book a session. Tune in live every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time and every Friday, 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Or look for our new releases and podcasts every Monday. Until next time, be well, and we'll see you again on Adventures in Truth Livecast.